Welcome once again into the Soccer OG. Hey, that's me, Max Bretos. Episode 195. As always, a reminder to rate, review, download, subscribe, and tell a friend of our podcast being heard coast to coast, all over North America, all over the world. Make sure you're part of all the fun. Make sure you check out the Soccer OG on YouTube under my name, Max Bretos. New videos being put up there all the time so you can not only listen, but you can see. A lot on the horizon, there's no question. A lot to talk about this week. But a show I've been looking forward to do for quite some time. And this is the tip of the iceberg, because I want to do a bigger program of this, perhaps on a different platform. Perhaps I'm going to sell the idea, because it's a very interesting story and I got to live it. Joining me in the business end today, Fox Sports World, Fox Soccer Channel executive producer Dermot McQuarrie. Fox Sports or Fox Soccer Channel personality and Fox Sports World Report analyst Bobby McMahon, one of the most beloved figures in American soccer history, no question. And you may not know about Dermot, but he is one of the most beloved figures and one of the big reasons, the biggest reason I'm talking to you here today. A man who encouraged me, a man who believed in me so that I could pursue what I do in the soccer space and do it before really any other American had done it before. If you're unfamiliar with the story of Fox Soccer Channel and Fox Sports World back in the late 90s when the soccer landscape was completely different, there was nothing. That's right, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, there was nothing. This pair of channels, one that preceded the other, changed everything. And many of you lived it. And the reason I want to do this is because the people out there have told me they want to hear about these stories. The beginning of soccer in North America on TV. We will talk to Dermot and Bob about it in the business end. So stick around for that. Very interesting. And if you're a fan of the Premier League or the Champions League, the Serie A, MLS, this is where it all started in many ways. So we won't have check complete via big business end, but we begin as we always do with the rundown. Rocking it down in the rundown, a few competitions I want to focus on. I'm recording this at the end of action on Tuesday. It would make sense to do that at the end of Wednesday, but I wanted to get this podcast, and the podcast is about Fox Sports World, Fox Soccer Channel. You'll be able to reminisce a lot. Two incredible people. I've had such a great time having this conversation. I speak to Dermot every now and then, but I had to hunt down Bobby. Bobby McMahon, who people bring up all the time. Where's Bobby McMahon? Well, we had a chat, and he looks wonderful. He sounds wonderful. He's a beautiful soul. You're going to enjoy that conversation. A few competitions to talk about. I saw the Tuesday Champions League games. We have some Wednesday games coming up, and this is a big mistake, but I'm feeling PSG. I don't want to see Atletico Madrid Dortmund, but you know, Barcelona, a lot of people feel, I mean, PSG, I think, have the stars aligned for them to make a nice run. And if they can get by, I mean, that side of the bracket, they can get by Barcelona, they'll take on Atletico Madrid Dortmund. I think PSG is the favorite to make the final. The other side of the bracket, we saw the first two quarterfinals, and I told this to people. I said the round of 16 of the Champions League was maybe the worst it's ever been. It's generally pretty bad. The quarterfinal draw came out, and it was these incredible matchups. And I guaranteed that the quarterfinals would be considerably better. And I could not have predicted they would be as good as they were. These first legs, I mean, that's as good of a day of the Champions League as you could ever hope for. Real Madrid, Man City, 3-3. All six goals were unbelievable. All six goals were goals of the week type. Not all six. Four of them definitely were. Arsenal and Bayern Munich, back and forth, 2-2. Controversy at the end with the Bukayo Saka trip in the area. I thought it was very close. To say that Bukayo Saka initiated the contact is a slippery slope. I don't know. I guess you could. But regardless of what happened, both games are poised in the second leg. It's good that Real Madrid and Man City happened in the quarterfinal, because if it was a final, the one-off game, we wouldn't get this. It would be cagey. So when we all wanted Real Madrid and Man City on opposite sides of the bracket. The reality is we want to guarantee that matchup. We got it in the quarterfinals. So this is the way tournaments should work out. Get the best two teams to play each other in the quarterfinals. You'll get two games and you'll get some freedom. I thought it was phenomenal. And the way Real Madrid battled back after falling behind 2 minutes in, Bernardo Silva's tricky goal was memorable. The Ruben Diaz own goal was the result of some very impressive Real Madrid pressing. Rodrigo, who I thought was the best player of the game, and that's, well, I'd say Phil Foden was the best. Rodrigo was right there. Phil Foden is the only thing that I think people are reluctant to say Phil Foden's one of the best players in the world is that he's English. I think we are calibrated to not think that English players can be that good because we figure they're a result of the Premier League and the hype. But I don't know what else to say. I'm one of those people. I don't know what else to say. I'm not going to tell you my eyes are deceiving me. Phil Foden is a remarkable talent. I mean, at the same level that we say Messi, Ronaldo, Mbappe. I'm just telling you. You see how that guy plays and how things slow down for him. And he could beat you in so many ways. And he can use every part of his body. He is an elite, elite player. The English national team is not going anywhere. They're going to be a powerhouse. They're going to win a major competition. Perhaps they win it this summer. They're my pick to win it, the Euros in Germany. So Phil Foden's goal was fantastic. Josko Vardiol's goal was amazing. And Federico Valverde's goal sounded like, you know, it sounded like a cannon coming off his foot. Boom, boom. Unbelievable. So whatever happens in the second leg, I don't care. Same with Arsenal-Bayern, although, you know, Bayern have put themselves in a great position. It could have been better if they hung on 2-1, but it could have been worse if Saka got the penalty call. So excellent, excellent stuff. Other competition I want to touch on here is the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Last week, and I just want people to be aware of this because there is an agenda, and I want people to let them think for themselves, because it wasn't just certain accounts that, you know, heap on MLS or heap on American soccer. It wasn't just media members of the U.S. It was Mexican media members. After Columbus tied their game 1-1, you know, everyone said, oh, four Mexican teams are going to play in the semifinals. It's over. I kind of like threw back. I go, I know what you mean. I mean, we can't assume that the Columbus crew are going to go down to the Volcan and beat Tigres. But I see this Columbus crew team. They're not schleps. And I go, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. And some of these MLS teams have played well enough. I think FC Cincinnati is a good example. You know, they were competitive with Monterrey at Monterrey before succumbing. That, you know, everyone was ready to just crap all over MLS. And MLS is not going to necessarily win this. And I'm recording this before I'm not a big Messi fan. Let me rephrase it. I love Messi, but I'm not one of these guys that go, ah, Messi. Oh, yeah, yeah. Give me your shirt. I love you, Lionel. I respect him and love watching him play, but I'm not cuckoo. But I really want him to beat this Monterrey side after everything that's happened with Tano Ortiz and the dumb stuff that he said, saying that they were going to favor Messi. Give me a break. The officiating has been skewered for Liga MX teams in that tournament for so long. Give me a break. This is the gamesmanship that Mexican clubs do in this tournament that has benefited them. So why not do it? MLS has got to wake up and get into the dark arts and push back when stuff like that happens. And I think Messi's one of those guys that's going to push back. So I like their shot on Wednesday. You might be hearing this afterwards, and Monterrey got through. And if Inter Miami gets through, they will play Columbus in the semis, and an MLS team will make the final. And who knows what happens there, although Club America look amazing. They are clearly the favorites. But the constant poo-pooing on MLS that they can't get anything right, that manifested itself last week when Inter Miami lost. Even though they were playing better than Monterrey in the first leg, it was a crazy red card. Columbus had a crazy red card, and that took away their chances. But fine margins, and for those two results to happen and everyone to say that MLS is in the dumpster, I was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. These people are acting like it was the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones, like it was this slaughter. It wasn't. And now Columbus, better than Tigres. I mean, they fell behind early and they pushed. They had chances to win it in the 90 minutes before the penalties. Patrick Schulte, spectacular, saving twice, including André-Pierre Gignac. So, this is, look, MLS has its flaws. I know I work for MLS, by the way. I'll be doing Portland LAFC this weekend, so if you're in Portland, come out and say hello. I'm very excited. I'm doing a lot of the West Coast games and taking some ownership of all the West Coast and Mountain Time Zone teams. So, I will say that take it with a grain of salt, because in the eyes of this, they can't do anything right. And they were wrong about this. Even if Columbus loses in the semifinals to Monterrey, and it's Monterrey America in the final. MLS won a CONCACAF Champions Cup 2 years ago. They came close enough with LAFC last year. They had two semifinalists. This is not a big gap. And if you're going to sit there, because the gap was huge for so long, the gap is very small. And it feels like MLS is going to pass Liga MX here with the next couple years. And hopefully they get some help. They have this Board of Governors meeting. They get a little more spending money. I know a lot of people are screaming for it. I respect MLS for being careful with their purse strings so that this league can survive, because it's losing money. And a lot of these owners that you have don't want to lose money all the time. Everyone's probably losing money in MLS. But you got to spend some to earn some, right? To win some. So hopefully something like that happens. But you can't deny the growth. You know, the criticism of the U.S. Open Cup. It's not perfect. I wish it was there. I wish we were aligned with that. But I can understand when you're MLS and the owner and the commissioner, to put your owners at ease, that's what you do. So MLS strikes back a little bit. I'm not saying it's a finish. No, MLS has, again, we have so much work to do. We need people to start watching it. I know it's not in droves. I don't know the numbers that we're getting on Apple TV. I know they're good. They're not great. I can assure you that, because if they were great, we'd be screaming it to the mountaintops. But this is a slow burn. We're going to be patient. But we're seeing that growth. So, good stuff there. Final thing I want to mention, the U.S. Women's National Team keep winning. It wasn't pretty. I actually just watched that game on delay as they win the She Believes Cup in penalties. It's interesting because there's so much to criticize about the U.S., and they don't have their full-time coach yet. Twyla Kilgore is still in charge, and she made some selection mistakes, but Alyssa Nair comes up big in the penalty shootout. The U.S. don't look great, but they keep winning, and to me, that's just a great sign. So they beat Japan, they beat Canada, two elite teams. You go back to what they did in the Gold Cup. This is very good, and Jaylen Shaw, who has been... She's had her strings pulled a lot with playing on this team. Eventually, she will be made whole and be one of the key players, as will the other young players that Sophia Smith and, you know, Jaden Shaw and Sophia Smith, certainly at the top of that list. And more players will start coming. Mallory Swanson, Sam Coffey. We'll see where it goes. But good news. Good news with all of that. This is a very special Soccer OG. Rate, review, download, subscribe. Coming up next, the story of Fox Soccer Channel and Fox Sports World. Let's reverse that. Fox Sports World and Fox Soccer Channel, from the people that were there. A little startup soccer network that nobody thought would work out, and in its time changed soccer televised in this country, where it is now a multi-billion dollar industry. It had all the leagues under one roof: Premier League, Bundesliga, Serie A, one-time La Liga, MLS, Argentine soccer, Brazilian soccer, Chilean soccer, Champions League. Had it all under one roof at the same time, which you can't even imagine. And this was only 20, 25 years ago. I got to work there. It was the first major job I had. And, well, it changed my life. And it has allowed me to work in soccer for 3 decades. It's a very interesting story. This is just the tip of the iceberg. We will talk about it a little bit. Dermot McQuarrie, who was the executive producer, my boss, Bobby McMahon, who was high-profile talent, along with me. There's only 3 or 4 of us. It's pretty amazing what we were able to do. I mean, we were doing 20 games a weekend and a news show. This is the beginning. So you young kids, you wake up one day and you see games on NBC and CBS, this was the beginning. By our blood are your lands kept free. I messed that up. It was Lord of the Rings. The lands of Gondor. It is time now for the business end. The story, Fox Sports World and Fox Soccer Channel. Dermot McQuarrie, Bobby McMahon. Join me next. are back here in we'll be an elongated business end. This is a show I've been looking to do for some time. I don't think we'll do it justice in the short amount of time. So many people reach out and ask, hey, so-and-so about the Fox Sports World days or the Fox Soccer Channel days. Where's Bobby McMahon? Where's Michelle Lissel? You name it. And I brought part of the band back together to reminisce a little bit about an incredible time and a time that I think the sport of soccer is indebted to. I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I'm certainly tooting the horn of the people that will be joining me as well, because it really was the gateway. Dermot McQuarrie, who has always been my the man who stood behind me and really pushed me in this business. And I'm indebted to you forever that, Dermot. Dermot, what was it? You're the executive producer of Fox Sports World at the time.
Yes, I was. And I remember when you came to me and said you wanted to become a commentator. And I said, okay, put on something on tape and let me hear it. You then proceeded to imitate people like Martin Tyler and this one and that one. And I said, right, I really wish I'd kept that tape. I then gave it back to you and said, now go and do it again in your own voice. And let me, sparing your blushes, I think you are a tremendous commentator. I think you're great, and you practice. You certainly do all your work, and you know that it's like playing football, soccer. You've got to be match fit, and doing all those games, you're now match fit. And it's a great credit to you, and how good you've become, Max.
Oh, that's lovely, Dermot. And your famous saying, "You're only as good as your last game." I repeat that to myself before every game. And you would love this. I actually, some of the young announcers on the Apple TV, I have spoken to them and said, you've got to do this in your own voice. You're imitating English announcers. So I figured it's an impossible temptation not to. And maybe it's the gateway before you find your own voice. So
I think it's confidence as well. Confidence, sure, in your own voice. You think, is my voice good enough? Yes, it is. And, okay, I know that in America, every commentator in every sport has their own call, and people say, oh, I love that, and he shot it from downtown. And well, in Scotland, we say he put it in the back of the onion bag, but nobody would know what you were talking about.
Speaking of, we're outnumbered here with the Scots. And one of the questions I get the most when people want to reminisce about the old Fox days is, where's Bobby McMahon? And Bobby McMahon's here. And look at the hair, Bobby. I mean, people can't see it. We may be mostly listening on audio, but look, spectacular.
I've got it now. I've got it again.
how have things been?
Good, good. Just, sort of semi-retired, doing a little bit of work, but enjoying going back to play over 55 soccer, playing tennis, playing golf, getting lots of exercise and just enjoying life.
Well, how often do you get recognized? Because I know the Fox Sports World Report was a sensation north of the border. And when I was in Canada with any combination of you or Mitch Peacock or Michelle, I would get autograph requests on your behalf.
Yeah. I think it's actually interesting. I think, it's probably about, probably 10 years now since I kind of just faded out the scene. And 10 years is a long time. But it was interesting when I came out to Kelowna. It was late 2021, and it was too late to pick up in the soccer and start playing again. And what happened was the next year I got a name of a guy to contact that was running the team. And he says, come out for a practice. So I came out for a practice, and then the practice says, yeah, you seem to know what you're doing. Do you want to sign for this year? I said, no problem, all the rest. I get an email two days after. He goes, I know who you are. He says, I know who I am as well. He says, you've been in my living room many times.
Yes. So, well, this is the thing. And I'll be honest, Dermot, when we did this channel, I had no idea the width and breadth of it, because I thought it was a small channel. I truly believe we were broadcasting games to an audience of a handful of people. I have discovered later that has not been the case. So many people began their soccer journey in North America watching these channels, much more than we could ever imagine, because I get it everywhere at airports. It's young, old, that
were maybe 4 or 5 years old and that was their beginning, or people who first got introduced to the sport or picked up their education of the sport. And it's pretty remarkable. I mean, this is, I'm very proud. I know, I think I speak for all you guys as well about what that channel was able to achieve. Channels.
So when you look at the number of leagues that we had everything, I think, apart from the Spanish league.
We had it a couple years. It would replace the Serie A on a couple years.
We did. And we had that commentator in Italy who insisted on pronouncing the Italian names with an Italian accent. And I said to him one time, when you go into a restaurant, you say, the waiter says, what would you like to eat? You say, I'll have the spaghetti. I said, is that how you answer? I said, why don't you just pronounce it, you know, Leonardo? We don't have to have Leonardo, you know. And I noticed some commentators these days on the German ones tend to do that as well. But, you know, when you think of the start of it, I remember getting a phone call from Tony Ball in 1997. He was the president of Fox Sports. And he said, I want you to meet me at a swimming pool at the Peninsula Hotel. And I thought, oh, this is the life in Los Angeles. So I got there and there was Tony Ball, Rich Batista, Simon Green, and a lady whose name I can't remember. She was a very good graphics person who Tony had brought over from London as well. And he said, listen, now at that stage we had Fox Sports America because Fox had bought all the regional networks, I think 22 of them in 1996, I think. And they had bought two Spanish language channels, one for Latin America, one for North America. They decided to call it Fox Sports America because it was two Americas. Well, okay, fine. We soon moved on from there. But so he said, we buy all these rights in all languages, particularly English. Why don't we start an English language football channel? So it was called Fox Sports World because we knew we were going to have some rugby in there. And
darts.
We were going to have some cricket and, you know, and bits and pieces. So it was called Fox Sports World. And we took off from there. And then eventually, you know, you move ahead a lot. And we ended up, and it was David Sternberg who said, right, we're going to call it Fox Soccer. And there was a great debate. It was not going to be called the Fox Soccer Channel. It was only going to be called Fox Soccer Channel. So we all wondered about going, Fox Soccer Channel. The Fox Soccer Channel. And to David's great credit, he was also the person who went to Fox, the big Fox, and said, I'm going to take the paid programming off during the night. You're crazy. You're crazy. That makes money. Hardly makes any money. And we put football on, soccer, on 24/7. And yes, there were some repeats during the night and things. Then, of course, there was still rugby. We had the rugby club. So somebody said, what are we going to call that one? We'll call it Fox Soccer Plus. We are great at names. the names we can come up with. Heavens above Fox. I've still got one thing I have, and I wear it. When I go to Scotland, I have a rain jacket that says Fox Soccer Plus on, and I'm very proud of it. And I think we did very, very well. Yeah, there were hiccups and things like this. But, you know, at one stage, we were in 36 million homes. And that's an awful lot of homes. And although you'll get people who say, oh, we hate Fox, this, that, and the next thing. We don't like Fox News, and we don't like Murdoch, and all that next thing. I remember when Fox Soccer closed in 2013 or 14, because they'd lost the Premier League, I remember Fox, Christopher Harris from
the World Soccer, yep.
He said, okay, but remember, it was Fox Soccer that brought you soccer at first. Yes, of course, there was Gold TV and there was the days of, who was the guy who did the German?
Toby Charles?
Toby Charles, yeah, which was
the legendary.
How do I know this?
A guide commentary, somebody said. I mean, but we put it together. Yeah, we were in a tiny studio in 10,000 Santa Monica Boulevard. One of the greatest things I remember was when we moved eventually the Champions League into the big studio at Fox. And then also, and I'll say this for myself, and I went to David Hill and I said to him, I want to do the Champions League final on Big Fox. No, it wasn't expletive before the word no. And then I went back the next year and I said to him, you're going to do it? No. I said, well, okay, it's $200,000 for a 2-hour program on Fox. I've got the $200,000. I'm buying the tank. And he goes, oh, really? And I said, yeah. We go to a meeting, and Hilly sits there and says, right, I've got this idea. And they all these executives say, I want to put the Champions League final on Fox Sports, to which I said, my God, Hilly, that's a good idea. And then I said to him, but there's one more thing I want. When we do that, we are Fox Sports. I want you to put the Champions League final in there. And one of the reasons, by the way, that baseball is on a Saturday night at 8 o'clock on Fox, Saturday night at Eastern, was because the Champions League didn't finish till 8 o'clock on the Saturday night. And so they put the first game after Champions League, they put the baseball on. Great ratings. Now they put it on at 8 o'clock every Saturday night, and it gets far better ratings than 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah. But anyway, I think there was a great growth of Fox soccer. And then, of course, you know, Fox Sports News. And I think that people watched, people liked it. And, of course, they loved you, Bobby. They loved you.
They did.
Who's Bobby McMahon? Bobby McMahon is Bobby McMahon. Now just listen to what he has to say. Yeah.
Bobby, do you remember when Dermot reached out to you? I mean, obviously, there's a communication about this news show, which I didn't think they'd be able to pull off. And you guys did an incredible job because it was every day accruing all this highlights and footage and for an hour and make the most out of it.
Like how I remember, and Dermot, you know, like correct me if I'm wrong, but this is how I remember. I remember I originally got approached to do a show that Joe Piscucci was coming, was building out of Fox Sports World Canada called, I think, Global Sports Link. And it originally started was, I was up in Edmonton. I was just finished working on World Track and Field Championships. And I got a call up there when we were winding it up. And it was Joe Piscucci had tracked me down, my wife, and said he'd be trying to get a hold of me. He says, we're starting this sports channel, rugby, cricket, you know, soccer, European, you know, non-American kind of sports. We're going to have this global sports link. And we might need somebody to fill in 5 minutes every now and again on soccer, right? So we used to, the very first global sports, like Michelle was part of it, and it was half an hour repeated with just one slight change in the second half hour. And I got to go on, it was a Thursday. I used to wait for a phone call and be Joe going, we need 5 minutes to fill, can you come in? I'd go in, we'd fill the 5 minutes. I'd be absolutely fascinated by seeing myself on, you know, the screen and the pictures and all the rest. And then I think Dermot had the idea and approached, I would assume, Global in Canada about doing this nightly soccer show. And that's where, and I remember Dermot came up, and this is how I remember it. It was kind of like a test for us. And I came out the studio and he looks at me and goes, when are you usually on? I went, Thursday for about 5 minutes. Well, that's going to change. You're on Mondays and Fridays. I'm on Mondays and Fridays. And we started doing the, you know, these guys, the guys that were involved, the Carlos was way back at the beginning, Jeremy St. Louis, Owen O'Callaghan came across, Luke Crawford was involved. You know, there's so many names, Michelle, had gone through it. But to churn that out 7 days a week was pretty amazing. And then, you know, Monday I would do the wrap up from the weekend, and Friday I'd do the kind of preview. And during the weekend I'd watch like 7, 8, 9, 10 games. And I was as happy as a thinking, you know what?
But the thing about what you've got to realize, though, Max, that that was produced from a news studio. It, you know, that where we were with Global was they were basically a news, it was a news studio. So you're not talking about somebody that's got, you know, 25 videotape recorders, you know, and satellite stuff coming in right, left, and center. And sometimes it was really pulled together. And, you know, yeah, could we have got some more highlights? Yeah, and of course, people are saying to me, you know, you don't have the rights to that footage. Ah, I said, you know, like the old Argentine phrase, yeah. If you have the tape, you have the rights.
Wait, let's, that's one of the funny stories. I remember we were watching the Spanish language in Argentina was doing a World Cup show, and they were, I think I was with you, Dermot, and they were doing the highlights of the day, and they had the NBC, NBA on NBC theme music, and you're like, wait a minute, they can't use that. And then you called them, did you clear that? And they said, no, we had it in the library and we slapped it on there. We've got to take it off. Jeremy, let me ask a quick question because I think this is going to blow people away. I don't know if you're at liberty to say, but those early days with the Premier League, the rights, because I remember Nick Geber said he had the radio rights for the Premier League and he got them for free. And some of the, I mean, I don't know what that looked like, but you look at the rights fees that for soccer in this country and they're in the billions. And this was this wasn't that long. I remember the day where it was at Richard Scudamore, was at the Premier
And he
made the big move in NBC, and I was like, this is the changing of the time, because, and the rights fees were, I couldn't believe it. But back then, this was, many times some of the leagues would give, was that be accurate to say they would, there would be a trade-off to get these on the air?
You get a trade-off, some of them. I remember, I can't remember what year it was, we paid something like about $30 million for the Premier League rights, and that was North and South America. And then we went down to Chile to buy, and I asked the ANFP, talking about the rights. Yeah, we want the same as you pay for the Premier League. Well, okay, fine, we'll give you, we gave them some nice money, but it wasn't like the Premier League. But, the way it's gone up and, the amount of money, but again, like just a quick story. Sometimes I do some consultancy work and you'll get somebody, accountants, who phone up and say, do companies make money out of things like the NFL? I said, not out of the game itself, but it's all part of a jigsaw, because there's the game and then there's the retransmission rights, there's the local rights, there's the fees from owned and operated channels, et cetera, et cetera. And it's the same with the Premier League. I don't think NBC makes money out of the Premier League match.
I don't think a lot of these leagues do. They're probably overinflated, but it's the price.
It's part of the whole NBC.
Yeah.
And you put the whole thing together. Like, for example, if you look at Fox, Fox makes money, and it's here, and here, but I think that the fees, and of course, what makes me smile is every single time we went to renegotiate any kind of the big rights, somebody would say, they've reached their peak. They'll never get any more. And I remember being in a meeting with Scudamore in Monte Carlo, says he, dropping places. and a dear Irish friend of mine said to Mr. Scudamore, we're not saying we're not going to we're going to pay you less, Richard. But, I think we should maybe just add a little bit here and there. We paid twice as much. and this is the thing. And then when NBC got it, oof, it was just incredible how much they paid for it. Was it $520 million?
Yeah, and now I think it's the $4 billion, but it's over certain years. It's just the La Liga is $1.5 billion for you. It's insane. Bobby, would the challenges covering it? Because even before we saw on Fox Sports report, we to see these games was like a treat. I remember you get a Champions League game. This is in the U.S. and you could tell us how it was in Canada. You get a Champions League game. You get a Monday night Premier League game. ESPN, who had it, wouldn't dare put anything on the weekend to jump in with their regular college football, basketball coverage. Nothing was there. Then all of a sudden you have these channels where, like you said, how many games you'd watch a day? I was the same way. And we would work 5 games a Saturday, 5 games a Sunday. I'd come out going, my brain is about to pop from watching 12 games from 7 or 8 different countries. But it was the dark ages prior.
Well, we're probably spoiled in Canada. Like, I arrived in 79, and in 78 the World Cup was still on closed circuit. You had to go to the movie theater to watch the World Cup and the World Cup final. But I think the turning point and where Canada kind of got a bit of a leg up on in terms of coverage was, I think, 82. I think it was CBC got the rights for the Spanish World Cup in Spain in 82. And just following that, TSN went on the air. And TSN very early started a show called Soccer Saturday, which was basically 3 hours on a Saturday morning with a guy called Graeme Leggett, played for Scotland, came over, was quite prominent in North American soccer circles. But Graeme Leggett used to present the show. It was 3 hours, and it was really quite something. At that stage, though, you got games from the last week that you weren't watching live to begin with. You had to watch the delayed from the week before. It wasn't great for anybody that followed English football, because you knew what the score was. But a lot of the foreign stuff they used to do, they used to cycle through a Spanish game, a Belgian game, a French game, maybe a game from Portugal, Germany, whatever. So they'd be on a little cycle. So you'd get a fairly regular dose of Real Madrid, Barcelona. In the meantime, the Italian league was still getting shown in the Italian club. The Scottish Scottish games were getting shown in bars around North America as well and Canada. So you put it all together, and really we're getting quite a healthy dose of soccer, and European championships were on. Champions League was getting picked up from ESPN in about the 90s. So, you know, there was a lot of stuff around that I think that maybe, you know, the States wasn't getting at the time. I used to, you know, in talking to my mates back home in Scotland, used to tell them the games we were getting, they were blown away. Like, they just weren't getting that quantity of games from around Europe at that time, and even beyond, looking at likes of World Cup and European Championships. So I'd consider ourselves, we were quite lucky. And so I was getting a pretty healthy diet I was getting my football fix.
I would say the biggest shock, I think, to many people, we covered Euro 2000 and then Euro 2004. We had games over the air. Robbie, we did the studio in Euro 2000. And the Euros prior to that were not to be found. I mean, we know the World Cup in North America started getting on networks. I think we could see them on Spanish language, and then in English by the 94 World Cup. But by 98, 2000, the Euros were heard about but never seen. And now it's, you know, another huge property, and every game is live. And it's, I think this one on Fox coming up is going to have Fox Network games over the air during the day of these Euros, just to show where it's gone. Something what Bobby said, Dermot, reminded me of a funny moment when we had, this was pre-internet, obviously. This was 96, 97. And we'd get tapes of games, and we would get them mailed, and it'd be a package, and it was from the Bundesliga. It would be Schalke versus Kaiserslautern. And I was in your programming department before I was an announcer. And that would be good at 3 p.m. on a Saturday. And then we'd get something. I think the Austrian and Swiss League was packed in. It was like a freebie. And we'd find a 6 a.m. slot. So we'd get these giant tapes, and we put them in. I remember one we had the Serie A. And Glenn Davis was calling the game. And someone accidentally because it was all on tape, put in the second half first. And then so he's commenting. He had no idea because this is the first time he's seeing it. And then someone realized it, and they put the second half back in. And Glenn Davis, bless his heart, was like, someone scored. It was like Simone Inzaghi. Oh, my goodness. It's like a carbon copy from the first half. And then a couple beats go by, and then he realizes what's happening. And he just went silent, and we just kind of, but this was pretty much the Wild West. I mean, this was,
oh, it was. It really was. And you know, and of course, in those days, soccer was, you know, it was okay. Yeah, there were people who played soccer, and there was always these people, oh, yeah, I played soccer at college, and this, that, and the next thing. But it didn't have any kudos or credibility on television. And that's where Fox Soccer came along. And I said it was David Sternberg who decided we're going to call it Fox Soccer. And, you know, and it was a great decision to take. And
were you reluctant at that at first when it was Fox Sports World? Because when I was, because you're going to get rid of all these sports. Can you have a channel just on soccer? The answer we know now is yes. But at the time, did you think that was?
Well, we had to sit and look down, and we did have everything. You know, we had a lot of soccer. And, of course, also you can repeat. Like, they say that, let me see if I can get this right. If a game's played at 3 o'clock, 3 till 5, then there are people who, there are three shifts in the day. There's 2 till 10, 10 till 6, 6 till 2. So you've got workers who are working in those three shifts. So if you play a game in one of the shifts, then the other two want to watch it. So somebody's sleeping and they can watch it later. So you really should repeat a live match twice more, so that the people can see it. And even Sky does that. Sky will put the one on, and there'll be one on later at night and one on another one during the night or early in the morning the next day. And, you know, we had repeats. And then, of course, we had Sky Sports News, which we made a lot of. And then that, talking about highlights, Nick Pollard was the editor of Sky News. And I'd phone him and say, hi, Nick, it's Dermot here. Listen, I need your Sky News for a month before the World Cup and a month after the World Cup. Sure, here you go. So of course Sky News has got all the highlights in it. because it's a news program, you know. But, you know, and I think we did improve things. I think, by the way, I have to say, I think NBC has done an amazing job.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah.
They have poured a lot of money into it. They send crews to the UK. They've got those fan clubs. They've done a tremendous amount. They've got their studio in Stamford, Connecticut. And, you know, they a great deal of credit to them for what they have done. And good luck to them to keep the contract. I don't think they'll ever lose the contract.
No.
You know, and I think that the Premier League needs to be talking to them now and say, okay, you got a 6-year contract. Do you want to make that 10 or 12? You know, because there is nobody else who's going to do that kind of coverage than NBC.
Bobby, when you see about the humble beginnings, and we see about what's going on, did you feel like this sport was, we always knew it was, you know, the undiscovered country, this huge sport that was going to explode at one point. And to this, to be honest, I don't know if it's exploded in its totality yet. There's a lot more to come. Certainly as the U.S. develops their game, their domestic leagues, and which includes obviously Canada. But looking back then, did you think that those massive leaps right after we were working together in 2006, 2010, that those were possible?
I think coming from across the water, one of the things that you always had to be wary about was the history of the game in North America and the number of failures. Like, there was the 20s and 30s when there was a big push with Scottish and English players, particularly Scottish players, coming over and playing in the league. And then, you know, everybody that was in UK around the 70s was watching it, knew about NESL. It was, you know, Pelly and Cruyff, and you go through all the players. Like, the players at that time, Trevor Francis comes to mind. He finished the league with Birmingham one day, flew out and played for Detroit all summer, and then came back and played for Birmingham. Like, the number of players that came across was quite incredible. But that kind of failed as well. And MLS came along, and I think you got to say MLS was getting it wrong for a long time.
Yep.
It was, you know, the soccer specific stadiums were obviously a big, big thing. The contraction and taking out, I think it was the Miami and the two Florida teams.
Tampa Bay and Fusion,
In the 2000s turned out to be the right thing to do, even though it was viewed as a step backwards. And then the ultimate, and this kind of ties into the Fox Soccer Channel as well, was the signing of Beckham by Los Angeles. And I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but I do. I was my first trip down to Baltimore for the NCAA, the National Coaches Association.
We were there with you, yes.
Yes.
And that's where they announced it.
That was the day that Beckham signed and the story broke. And I don't think I had messaging on my phone at that time, but I remember going to the hotel, setting up my computer, getting Wi-Fi, whatever it was, and there was just email after email. It was, you know, can you come on the radio? Can you come on this? Can you come on that? Can you come? It was just like that Beckham moment was really an important one. And I think between the soccer-specific stadiums and Beckham signing, that took it to another level. And then, as opposed to the Premier League and La Liga being a challenger at MLS, it all kind of fused together, I think, and just sort of lifted the game. And it wasn't relying on one piece. It wasn't relying on just the domestic game or just the European game. It was actually the game that took off. And so it is difficult to think back to these years and think when the only thing that was on the agenda was failure.
Yes. There's a book about the growth of the sport in North America. There has to be a chapter of David Beckham. I didn't even think about it. I take it for granted, Dermot. And we had the MLS back then. It was like 2005, around then. Yeah. And I remember ESPN had the MLS package, and we would get Fox, we would get secondary or third pick, whatever it was. But we did get, I remember, we did get some Beckham games. I think we're going to talk a little bit about some favorite moments. For me, without question, was this Red Bulls Galaxy game at Giant Stadium, where it was 4-4. Beckham had an incredible game. I remember he assisted to Carlos Pavon. Or maybe it was 5-4 the Red Bulls won. Forgive me. Everyone scored. It felt like the moment we've been waiting for. It was like 70,000 people there. Celebrities were all there. We were there covering it. And looking back, and even now with what's happening in Miami, you know, David Beckham has been just essential. He has sped up the process, it has to be said.
Yes, I think that's a great way to describe it, sped up the process. We're getting there, but it was a slow progress.
Yes.
And he lifted it and kind of put it into warp speed.
But I think also that you're talking about the soccer-specific stadiums. I think that, and it's not a failure, but when you look at some of the soccer-specific stadiums, if you don't have a car, you can't really support the Galaxy. You know, because throughout the world, European, Latin America, etc., they're all walk-up stadiums. There's really no parking at any of the stadiums around the world, apart from the director's cars, or in Celtic Park, that school to the right-hand side. there's some big guy who goes, all right, Dermot, come on.
But the idea of taking my car or going down to Dignity Health Sports Park without my car is terrifying. That's a very good point, Dermot.
but you know, when you look at it, like LA, you can walk from LA. Seattle, they actually had the parade, and there was, because there's a whole tradition, because, and I think MLS has done really well overall for 25 years. I'm sure 25 years of when Manchester United, Celtic, all these people were 25 years old, they were still playing in muddy fields somewhere. Whereas, you know, MLS, and they've got the soccer-specific stadium. I think it is, you know, they've got to work with the cities, because if you take the Colorado is out in the boonies somewhere, LA is outside of, Galaxy's outside of town, Dallas is in outside of town. But the great thing, I think, about having a soccer-specific stadium, and the two differences are, I went to the Patriots Stadium. We were doing a survey during one winter, Sergio Portillo and I, up to our knees in snow and, oh, God, going everywhere. And we went to the Patriots. Now, the lobby has got all footballs. We won this, we won that, we won this. Then you walk down the hallway, and there is a box that says Patriots Ice only. And I said, and where's the New England? Oh, down there past the, in this little room down the back. Whereas at Dallas, it's their stadium, you know, and you go in there and these guys are there. I do think that there's still a lot of growth to be done. You know, Beckham went to Chicago, there was 64,000 the first game, 32,000 the second game, and I think that we were down to 15,000 because it was been there, bought the T-shirt, and that's it, you know. And when you consider it is an expensive, and hey, I live a mile and a half from the stadium where Mr. Messi plays. The cost of tickets there is horrific. I do think that MLS has done well in this, and you know, I think that they've got to look now and say, well, where are we going next? I know there's always a debate about relegation and promotion and all that sort of stuff. But tell you, watch USL. USL is coming on. And, you know, I think that USL will be a competitor to MLS at some stage.
Really?
I think the other thing, though, guys, we've got to remember here and give credit to it is the women's game in North America.
Phenomenal.
And that foothold in the 99 World Cup, I think, was really important as well. It was another one. And, you know, like, because America produced good women players, and that was something to get to get attention. They were always there. They were winning Olympics. They were winning World Cups. They're always competitive. They were producing stars.
Yeah.
And I think that's been very important as well. Once again, not what individual parts of it, but the game in itself getting lifted.
Yeah.
Somebody said the future of American football was at the feet of its women, because they were winning all these tournaments and the men weren't doing very well. And they were. And when we had women's football, because there's another one that started, failed. And people would say, I'm not watching that.
Well, and then they watch it because of the skills. But I think this is interesting because we've talked about the stadiums and, you know, Fox Soccer was there at the beginning. And, you know, one thing that we haven't resolved as a soccer community is getting people to stay at home and watch games. Because that's like the soccer-specific stadiums have helped. And they're generally more full than not, a couple exceptions. And by the way, I just wanted to say this too, with the movement out of these football venues. You know, calling games at Yankee Stadium for New York City FC is a horrible feeling, and they have their eyes on a new one because you have to be respectful for what the Yankees did. I would go there and someone say, "You can't. That's holy ground. Don't." Like, okay, I just got to go to my broadcast booth. I'm sorry. So eventually, they need to call them their own, and that's good. But I mean, I don't have an answer. I don't know if you guys would can come up with something that would say, what is that secret element, that little thing that could get people to in the United States and in Canada to watch soccer on TV the way they watch other sports when you see these ratings? I mean, the women's basketball Final Four had 18 million viewers, and obviously they had the sensation with this Caitlin Clark player. But how did those moments happen?
I believe, my opinion is, I think we've got to educate people to follow a team, because people say, oh yeah, I love the Premier League. I watch it every Saturday. But the Premier League has got all these teams in it. You know, what you've got to do is say, I'm a Bournemouth supporter or an Arsenal supporter. Now you can,
and then you will watch their away games on TV. You have to.
You can go and watch somebody else. If you, you know, if it's Liverpool, City, there's Arsenal, so you want to know if somebody's losing or winning, it's going to affect your team. But you can't say, I'm a league fan. You've got to say, I'm a team fan.
Bobby?
It's just the, you know, whatever sport you watch it more intensely and you feel it more intensely when you've got an emotional bond with that team. Yeah. That's just, you know, even when I was back in Scotland a couple of years ago, and, you know, the difference in 30 years with, when I've talked about the NFL before, the guys have got, you know, it's just American football. Now, basically, you know, these are guys that I played, you know, cricket with and soccer with and, you know, went through the sporting teenage years. They've all got their teams now. They've got, you know, they're not fanatics like watching Arsenal, Liverpool, or Manchester City. They take an active interest in it. And it's just, they've bonded with the team, whether it be the 49ers back to the Montana years, or, you know, Kansas City Chiefs now, or the Patriots through their great years. But they've bonded. Like, these guys either take the game or they watch, you know, they'll sit up till early in the morning and watch their bit of Sunday morning or Monday morning, Sunday night NFL fix. But it's because they've got that emotional, their emotional well-being is tied to it.
Yeah, without question. Gentlemen, this has been fantastic. I think we have to have a sequel at some point. But as we part ways about looking back at Fox Soccer Channel, Fox Sports World, some memories that stood out. I think I was always, just some memories for me, when I think Dermot would come out and say, well, we're getting... I remember in the hallway, he was, by the way, we're getting the Champions League. And I go, you're kidding. There's no way. And I know we had all these other leagues, but the Champions League was embedded with ESPN, so we're getting it. A little bit later, you were there. I had left. I went to ESPN at this point. But and I remember on the phone, he goes, yeah, Max, you may have left a little early. We're getting the World Cup. I go, no chance. And there it is. My timing is immaculate. I get to ESPN, and then the World Cup goes back to Fox. And so it was, But I some incredible moments of what that channel's been able to. Bobby, I think that Euro 2004 and those Euros we worked on, and working on that Champions League with Warren Barton, I think we were the first trio that did it.
Yep.
Those were just moments that just sprung me to where I am.
One of the things, there's two things that really, really, really stick in my memory. Is number one, it's when I came down in 2006 to do the World Cup with you, Max. I think we did 35 days straight without a highlight.
We had a
couple
reporters.
Everything was a picture and a graphic, right? And a report, because I think Michelle was in Germany.
Yes.
I think Dermot sent Michelle to Germany to file reports. But it was I think it was 35 nights. And when Kobe was in, and Steve Sampson was in, and Preki was in, added a little bit to it, but pull off 35 nights. And what I know we're going too long, but a great story from that World Cup final. That was the Zidane one, the headbutt on Materazzi. I was sitting in one of the rooms, and somebody from Fox Sports Radio had wanted me to do an interview after the game and before we taped our segment. And because it went to overtime, they got me right in extra time. I'm saying overtime, my God, extra time. So I'm on the air I'm on the air, we're yapping away, I'm watching the game at the same time. These guys are watching the game at the same time, exactly the moment Zidane headbutts Materazzi. Like, live on the radio, trying to describe to them what had happened.
What a
like, they have no idea. Like, they can't make, something's happened. It's happened. My God. You won't believe it. One of the most iconic moments in World Cup final history has just happened. So is that, but also the ability, and they've got to thank Dermot for this, to go to the final in 2010 when Inter and Bayern Munich played at the Bernabeu, like to broadcast from the Bernabeu. I can still feel the tingles in the spine with 80,000 people behind you, and you're trying to get here. It was magical.
Oh.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Bobby, because I think one of the great things, you can be like a child, you know, stepping onto the Bernabeu, stepping onto Wembley. And, you know, the Bernabeu groundskeeper was the Arsenal, used to be the Arsenal groundskeeper. And he was brought over to Real Madrid, and they said, what do you want? He said, I will tell you what I want. And the machines, the grass cutters they use are the English lawnmowers. And he said, I want this, that, the next thing. And I met him, and I said, God, that grass is beautiful. And he said to me, and then they bring those 22 guys on, and they screw up my grass. He said, you go play somewhere else.
Dermot always told me that the groundskeepers were the rock stars, and I always convey that to people. You got these groundskeepers, they're next level. I mean, they are very real. Dermot,
you know, to step into the stadium, and particularly when we tend to go, it's empty to begin with, and you go there and you can look at it, and it's amazing. And you see, you know, the hairs go up in the back of my arms thinking about it. You know, oh, and by the way, at the Bernabeu, we're ready, go, great stuff. And somebody says, oh, no, you can't put that beer poster up. What? You're not allowed in Spain. You're not allowed to put alcohol signs up in stadium. Eh? That's why the ones now say zero, you know, Löwenbräu or something like this, Carlsberg zero.
Löwenbräu. Dermot, something that you're very proud of that sticks out from that time?
Hey, what?
Very proud about what you were able to accomplish during those years with Fox.
Taking you away from programming scheduling.
Genius.
The great thing about Max is, and Max never gets above his station. And if I say to him, remember, if I hadn't given you the job as a commentator, you'd still be Marvin's assistant in the program.
The famous Marvin's assistant. It's very true. People say, where'd you get your start, Max? I go, you're not going to believe this, but Fox was my first broadcasting job. I wasn't doing the local news in Laramie, Wyoming. I came in and then I did 10 games a day. And I go, that's how I started. People go, you're kidding me. I go, no, that was it. I had zero training prior.
But it is true. And I say, you know, sparing your blushes, I think you're a very, very good commentator.
This is why I did this podcast, so I could hear this at the end. That was a little bang.
No, he'll come back on. Sorry, I missed that. Could you say that again? Just say that bit again for me. You do your prep, and it's essential. And you've always got to. When I was a newscaster or hosting the 6 o'clock news in Scotland, I was able to put butterflies in my stomach. If I was ever feeling, No. You need to be able to put a little bit of butterflies in your stomach just to keep you sharp. But you've done all your prep, and you know, never, ever. And the other thing is, you know, the commentator commentates, and the color commentator tells you why something happened. No, not 90 minutes of story.
Sometimes we get... as we part ways, Dermot would not be so proud about this, but in 2002, we did the same World Cup show. It was Christian Miles and Giles Elliott, who was our reporter. And we were watching these games at 2, 3, 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And we try to avoid the bars, but the bar, and we did it for 3 weeks. And then the final week, we said, let's just go and watch the game. I think it was USA Mexico. And we may have overdid it a bit. And then we were taping 10 a.m. And we're like, we almost hit the finish line. I want to crawl up in a hole and die at this point. Because I was like, I had not slept. We may have had, you know, we were doing our research at O'Brien's Pub on Wilshire. And it went a little pear-shaped. But we got back on the rails, Dermot, by the end of it.
And by the way,
that was a kill of tournament.
It was.
Talking of researchers, Giles Elliott, the world's best researcher.
He was everything. He was our pronunciation guide, and he would have an answer for everything.
Oh, who the heck would know who's on the Iceland team? Childs comes out and says, I'll tell you who's on the Iceland team.
We'll have to find Giles to see if he can get back on here. Dermot McQuarrie, Bobby McMahon. I don't know where the sport would be in this country without the great Scots. I mean, truly. So I to see you guys here, I look forward to maintaining contact and saying hello from time to time. This was fantastic. I appreciate you guys joining me.
Great fun.
Our pleasure. Good to see you, Bobby.
Great to see you again, Dermot. Max, fantastic.
Fantastic. You're looking well. We'll have a reunion here at some point. We'll bring in all the characters that we mentioned as well along the show. We appreciate you joining here at the Business End. That's all the time for the Soccer OG. We'll have Check Complete next week. Hope you enjoyed it. Rate, review, download, subscribe, tell a friend. We'll be back again next week.